You're listening to Power Athlete Radio, a podcast dedicated to empowering your performance every damn day. Join former NFL pro and Power Athlete founder John Wellborn as he dissects the greatest minds in strength, conditioning, and more. So whether your goal is to be the hammer, destroy mediocrity, or simply move the dirt, you've come to the right place. Now with the warm-up done, let the gains begin.
We interrupt this episode for a shameless self-promotion. Everyone's a hero in January, but when it comes to February and beyond, not so much. If you want to be one of the few who punch the entirety of 2024 in its smirking face, then do it with Power Athlete. With an annual subscription, you'll get 365 days of performance-oriented programming delivered to your phone. It's like having a world-class coach, aka me, John Wellborn, in your pocket for less than a dollar a day. When you compare it to the month-to-month package, you're scoring a whole 2 months for free. And because I'm feeling extra generous this holiday season, everyone who signs up for a year before January 31st gets a training consult with me and my team worth hundreds of big ones for free. All you have to do is sign up over at powerathletehq.com/training. Don't be a just for January athlete. Commit to the cause with Power Athlete and crush 2024 like you hit it with a hammer. Remember, I'll say it again. That's powerathletehq.com/training. Now back to the episode. Hey, welcome to another episode of Power Athlete Radio. I'm John Wellborn, and I'm joined today by Dr. Hunter Waldman, Power Athlete coach and supplement expert researcher extraordinaire. So what I want to do today is we're going to do kind of a short form blast because I want to have Doc here in the podcast room and do it in person because they're such more rich. But what I wanted to do is throw a stake in the ground for the end of 2023 going into 2024. The definitive supplement recommendation for Power Athlete. And what we get hit in the Discord and all over is like, you know, like, what should I be taking? What shouldn't I? And I wish there was just a small, short cheat sheet of like, hey, if you got these, you're covered. Now, you can go get micronutrient testing, go do all the Vibrant America cool shit where all of a sudden now you start trying to fine tune. But this is what, if I'm going away for 2 weeks, this is what I throw in my bag because I can't take everything.
Yeah, sweet. Be happy to give more of a condensed version. There's a million different supplements out there. I've done a research on a lot of them. We usually rate supplements on a tier system. So tier one, tier two, tier three. For those who aren't aware, tier one supplements, that's less than 5% of the supplements out there. They're the ones that we know they work. There's a wealth of research behind them. And they are generally cost effective. Those are the ones that you've probably heard about. That's going to be your creatine, your caffeine, your betaine. We'll talk about some of these. You've got your tier two. That probably makes up about 80% of supplements. Those are, and again, there's a spectrum there because there are some that are nearly a tier one. They need a little more research behind them, like astaxanthin, which I'll talk about. I'm a big fan of that. It's one of my lab's main focus right now is astaxanthin. And then there's other ones that like alpha-GPC, which a lot of people are hearing about as a neurotropic, that needs a little more research in order for it to be considered a tier one. And then you have tier three, which is, hey, there are negative effects from this. There's nothing good from it. That's like your deer antler velvet back in the day when Ray Lewis was taking it.
Yeah, that was all bullshit, dude. I did a pretty big supplement deep dive in like deer antler. We had a guy on the podcast that was like spinning this bullshit, and I dug in the research and I'm like, this is nonsense. Now he was probably injecting GH.
Yeah.
And then was, you know, oh, look at my blood work. It's so amazing. I'm like, well, you're probably taking growth hormone. This deer antler isn't fucking converting over and doing what you say it's going to do.
Yeah. I mean, it was being destroyed in the stomach before it got anywhere. So, we'll just put our attention on the tier one, a couple tier twos, try and keep it between maybe 5 to 8 supplements, keep it on the lower end. But real quick, let me just explain to people. So I've done all this research on dietary supplements, and it's for me, and maybe this is just, you don't know what you don't know. But I've been exposed to this long enough. I look at this continuum back in 2002, Greg Glassman, he wrote a What Is Fitness? You probably remember that article. And there was a spectrum on there. Now, this was really the first time I had seen the spectrum. It made sense in my head. It was, for those that haven't read that article, on the left-handed side, it was there was just a horizontal line. And it went from sickness to wellness to fitness. And as you went from sickness to wellness to fitness,
Funny,
all of these.
he called it a spectrum, but it's not a spectrum. A straight line that ends like that is, or that goes on forever, is a continuum.
Yeah, a
So
continuum. That's right.
when I read it, I was like, this isn't a fucking spectrum. This is a continuum.
Yeah,
A
it's not. You're
spectrum
right.
is like a you know, like a gauge, right? Like you
right.
know, you go from one side to the other, and they drew it as like a straight line. And I'm like, that's a continuum, not a spectrum.
Yeah, and the reason they called it a spectrum is because they did put a little inverted U over there, over the top of it, and then they had all these markers. But there's markers that show like muscle mass, blood pressure, cholesterol, lipids, all the different profiles, all the different cardiometabolic markers. And as you go from sickness to wellness to fitness, there's technically they should improve. And it's a very simple way of putting it. In today, when I talk to people about supplements, whether that was at the collective, online on the Discord app, at the university level, wherever it might be, I think people think of supplements as getting you from wellness to fitness into like this nth degree of performance or health or longevity. And the truth is my belief that dietary supplements can get us probably from sickness to wellness. But getting from wellness to fitness, if we want to stay with that terminology, that's really your nutrition, that's your sleep, that's your daily habits. I heard Andrew Huberman say, better living through chemistry still requires better living. And I'm a big fan of that quote because I think people put dietary supplements on a pedestal. And the truth is it's probably not. Most of what people are taking is either placebo effect, which is a real thing, or it doesn't have as much of a magnitude of an effect as they would like. So if you're deficient, you were talking about being deficient in your ability to methylate. So let's use that as an example. So a lot of times what we'll see is we'll see an increase in homocysteine. That's a marker I look at all the time in my biochem lab as a pro-inflammatory marker for cardiovascular disease. So one of the things that happens is if you can't methylate with B vitamins, then that homocysteine level goes up. Well, B vitamins, they donate a methyl group to homocysteine. They convert it back into methionine, which is a harmless amino acid, and that brings your your homocysteine levels down. So it's funny you brought that up because one of the very first things I recommend to anybody is a multivitamin. It's not fun, you know, it's not sexy to talk about. It's not one of these again, nootropics, it's not lion's mane, but when you look at the research in terms of multivitamins, it has really either null effect or positive effect. The wealth of data out there on a multivitamin essentially shows that there's really no detriment to it, and it's very hard to get any kind of toxicity from it. So specifically, you want to look for a methylated multivitamin. You want to look for the vitamins in there and see that there's a met. They almost will always have the name methyl attached to them. The reason for that, it's again interesting you brought it up, Dr. Tom, of course, being on top of this. And I try and keep up with some of the top supplement companies out there. Thorne's a big one. I'm always impressed with that company, and you'll see they've got Thorne multivitamins. But essentially, what methylation is, for those who are unaware, we don't have to have a biochem class, but anytime you consume a nutrient, a vitamin, one of the steps is a methylation step, a methyl being donated to it. Essentially, it activates it.
Sure.
If you look at creatine synthesis, the very last step in creatine synthesis is a methyl being donated to it so that we have creatine. If you lack the enzyme, or if it's just downregulated, and if you're active like we are, there's a high chance that methyl enzyme is downregulated or impaired. And that's due to vitamin and mineral deficiencies. So if you can't methylate, all of these vitamins and all of these minerals, all of these pathways that we're aware of, your ability to activate them is also impaired. And that's an issue, as we talked about with homocysteine. So looking for a methylated multivitamin, and then also usually if it's a methylated multivitamin, the minerals will be chelated, and that's important because chelated means it's been bound to an amino acid. So we'll use magnesium as an example. So there's magnesium oxide, there's magnesium citrate. These are garbage forms though of magnesium, but they're the most common ones that people will take. They're cheap, but they're not bioavailable. So when minerals like magnesium are chelated, they'll be bound to an amino acid. An example is like magnesium malate. And so that increases the bioavailability and the absorption of those minerals. So yeah, I would definitely recommend a good multivitamin to fill in any kind of those nutrient deficiencies that we have, whether it be vitamin or minerals up front. And then Dr. Tom had he's a big proponent of gut health. And so, I've always said it's not what you eat, it's what you absorb. And everybody's starting to go ahead.
I mean, that's been something we've seen universal where people are deficient in either minerals or different like vitamins, and it really comes down to absorption, especially a lot of low gut level inflammation where that inflammation is binding up the receptor sites and the gut can no longer absorb this type of stuff. So cleaning up a lot of that low level inflammation or inflammation tends to fix a lot of these micronutrient deficiencies. And once you fix all that stuff up, if you're still deficient, then you just got to hammer it. We interrupt this episode with a shameless self-promotion. Power Athlete delivers battle-tested performance programming for every kind of athlete. So do you want to go from average Joe to MVP? Then dominate with Field Strong. Get stacked and jacked with Jack Street. Hustle in life and still build muscle with Grindstone. Fear no opponent with Dragon Slayer. Be harder than coffin nails with Hammer. Max out minimal equipment with Lean Enable. Or unlock those newbie gains with Bedrock. Get over to powerathletehq.com/training and choose your 7-day free trial right here, right now. Get lifting, get training, get in shape, all while listening to the rest of this show.
That's it. And one of the easiest ways to clear up, because we've got to get, before you start talking about supplements, you got to take care of, okay, well, what if you're taking creatine, what if you're taking betaine and some of these other ones, and they simply aren't crossing over into the bloodstream? There's an issue there. So we got to clear that up. So people love to talk about different ways of clearing up the gut microbiome. It's interesting that really the supplement that has the most research on it from this perspective that has totally been forgotten about because it had no effects for performance is glutamine. So glutamine, the amino acid glutamine, it's the most prevalent amino acid in the body. It's
Glutamine got curb stomped.
Big time.
Recently, within the last bunch of years. And the issue was they were looking at it for muscle building. Does this have a net one effect? Does this build more muscle? And they were like, no. And then everybody shit on glutamine when I think it ends up helping with the gut and also with the brain.
And the immune system. So glutamine, so 10 to 20 grams if you're having gut issues, but your enterocytes, essentially the cells of the gut lining, those cells oxidize for energy at a very high rate, glutamine. The mucosal cells, if you've got leaky gut, they run off glutamine. Your immune system, 90% of it is synthesized in the gut. So it's not a coincidence that the immune system does a very great job of running off of glutamine as well. So usually I tell people, hey, you don't want, fermented foods, fiber, yada, yada, that's good. But an easy one, an easy staple is start supplementing with higher doses of glutamine and see if that doesn't fix it up. And most people I've talked to have found a lot of benefit from that. And again, get increasing the ability to, for the bioavailability of what we're about to talk about.
Is there a dosage recommendation? I mean, with creatine, we usually recommend, 5 grams in the morning, 5 grams at night. And I just read some really pretty fascinating research where they're pushing it up to 20, which if anybody has ever pushed out to 20, you end up having some GI distress. It's usually you can't overload on creatine because if you attempt to, you'll just shit your pants. But they found that they could titrate up to around 20 and saw some really interesting, benefits cognitively. I at one point pushed it as that high and I did not have positive effects. So I was laughing a little bit that, and then they were getting into different delivery systems and whatnot. But at the end of the day, like you can only absorb so much.
There's a buffering issue there with creatine as well. And again, we can get into that. But with glutamine, it's like for the normal individual, for females, 5 to 10 grams, for men, 10 to 20 grams. But of course, if you're injured, so there's a good bit of research on if you're injured and you can't train, glutamine, it has a very high ability to go through what's known as deamination and transamination, which essentially means it can donate an amino group to another amino acid and it can take on an amino group from another amino acid. And you can literally take glutamine, the body can, and convert it into any amino acid it needs to. So that's important for maintaining muscle mass. If you're sick, again, going back to the immune system, people who are burn victims, although that's not the audience we're talking to, but that you can get up to 100 grams and still be all right. So glutamine, it's a really powerful amino acid from that sense. And if you look at some of the data on people, you know, it's winter time, people, the prevalence of sickness is going up. A lot of people start jumping on vitamin C, and that's garbage. It's not how it works.
No.
But if you do want to recover from or shorten the recovery time, if you're sick, glutamine is a great supplement to supplement with.
Why did everybody start curb stomping it? I always thought glutamine, like
the performance.
It just was one of those things where you take glutamine, creatine, and amino acids.
Yeah.
And I think all of a sudden people realized that probably amino acids was like taking a dropper and putting it into, you know, a swimming pool in terms
That's
of,
it.
You know, if you're eating a high protein diet, you really need these extra aminos. And I think glutamine just got kind of caught up in this deal, and they were, you know, it's a bunch of research like, oh, it doesn't cause build muscle. I'm like, dude, but if it improves gut health and brain, I mean, at the end of the day, like cognitively and your ability to absorb, that's got to translate. So I'm surprised that it ended up getting kicked in the face as bad as it did.
Yeah, I mean, you hit it on the head. It's all about, everybody started looking at it as a potential ergogenic aid, and there was nothing there. They didn't increase any markers of performance. People were looking at it for recovery post-exercise, and the problem was they weren't controlling for protein intake. And as you mentioned, you throw an amino acid in with someone who's getting sufficient protein, it's not going to make a difference. Yeah. But what it is better known for, everything we just talked about, totally got thrown under the bus, ignored, and forgotten at this point. And people, you know, you talk about glutamine, people say, oh, it's just, you know, it's garbage. But it's like, well, if you're talking about enhancing performance, then yeah, it's probably not going to help you. But for all the other aspects, there's definitely a benefit there. So,
well, especially like you said, for people that are having GI and stomach issues, if you have a leaky gut or something where, you know, like, you know, there's so much inflammation that now all of a sudden all the receptor sites are getting bound up and you're not being able to absorb nutrients, adding something like glutamine is an easy, easy kind of win.
Yep. Easy fix. And that's what, you know, part of my lab is focused on is what are practical interventions, specifically whether it be nutrition or supplements that you can implement today that it will have immediate benefits with a low downside, if any. And so glutamine is definitely one of those. So assuming we've got the gut taken care of, and assuming that the listeners on here have a good whey protein or some type of protein source, you know, put that off to the side. There is a supplement, John, you may have heard of, known as creatine.
Ooh, do tell. It sounds so amazing. Please.
Yeah. All right. Well,
regale me with the facts.
Yes. So, you know, I get asked all the time on the Discord app, first off, you know, can I take creatine?
Do I have to cycle it like a steroid?
Is it a steroid?
Yeah, is it a steroid? Is it going to give me hamstring cramps? Am I going to?
Yeah, gyno.
Am I going to get gynecomastia from it? I mean.
Yeah. So, and what type to take? First off, let's just talk about creatine. I think most people on here are probably, the listeners are aware of the performance enhancing effects. In general, ladies taking anywhere from 3 to 5 grams a day, men taking somewhere between 5 and 10 grams a day, you can see improvements in your buffering capacity, which means that you won't fatigue as fast. If you look at maximal performance, so whether that be a one rep max on a bench or squat, over the course of about 30 days to 6 to 8 weeks, you could see about a 10% improvement. So if your bench press is 200 pounds, then just taking creatine monohydrate, 10% of that's 20 pounds. So gets you up to 220. So, and there's very little downside to it. So we know from a performance standpoint that creatine is top notch along with caffeine. But what a lot of people are unaware of are all the metabolic and cognitive benefits. And that's really where our attention is, my lab's attention is going to, at least with creatine. So most of the research that I'm going to talk about is referring back to creatine monohydrate. You were mentioning higher dosages that you could take up to 20 grams. That is true, especially if you're doing a loading protocol. But there is an issue with buffering. And so that's why people may ask about creatine hydrochloride or micronized creatine. There's even something known as fermented creatine. But just for everybody who's listening, the research supports creatine monohydrate, and there are no differences between these varieties other than maybe a little bit difference in GI distress
This episode of Power Athlete Radio is powered by Train Heroic, the most immersive strength training app experience on the market. We've built an online training business by partnering with Train Heroic to deliver all of our world-class training programs like Jack Street, Hammer, Field Strong, and Grindstone. To learn which Power Athlete training program best suits your goals, head to powerathletehq.com/training. And if you're a coach looking to build a business with the best training tech in the business, head to trainheroic.com/powerathletehq. And now back to the show. So just to give everybody a little bit of background, is creatine monohydrate's been around for a long time. It's relatively inexpensive to produce, and a lot of people make a lot of different versions. Personally, I take the Thorn just because I know it to be the best. Thorn is tested, and I'm not going to get any bullshit. I don't recommend you go buy a bunch of creatine off of Amazon that comes out of China. So I recommend you try to get it from a most reputable source. But what happened for supplement companies is they knew that they couldn't make big money on creatine because everybody was doing it. So roughly a commodity. There's kind of a, Thorn maybe charge a little bit more. Somebody else is a little bit less, but it's all about the same price. So they started taking creatine and making all these proprietary versions. When I was playing in the NFL, there was a supplement company that made one called creatine. That was a liquid delivery system. And they used to send me these like cases. And I just started like drinking the bottles just to kind of see what would happen. I'd be like, what if I drank a half of this bottle? And I literally drank as much of it as I could and never had any GI issues, but I also didn't notice any performance enhancing effects. So it's not like all of a sudden my biceps grew bigger. So I've tried just about every single one of these proprietary blends or this greatest, newest creatine or whatever. And all it is supplement companies making small tweaks, both to the product and to the branding and marketing so that there's a new type of creatine that allegedly has a better buffering, better delivery system and has all these other effects. But I've never seen any of the ones that I've taken have a better effect than just basic old creatine monohydrate. That was the first stuff we ended up taking in the early 90s. So you can go on and, you know, CellTech and Muscle Volume and all these different things all have their proprietary blend of creatine. But at the end of the day, something that's just basic creatine monohydrate from somebody like Thorn tends to be the most beneficial and most bang for the buck.
For sure. And I don't have a connection with Thorne at all, but I do appreciate their supplements and their testing and their quality. It's a great company. So one of my colleagues, he's at Texas A&M, Dr. Kreider. He is the leading researcher, the world-renowned researcher in creatine. He did all the creatine research back in the 90s, early 2000s, and most of that was with monohydrate. As I mentioned, a lot of this is now moving away from the performance side. And now we'll just like look at cognition real quick. So creatine serves as an energy substrate within the brain, specifically with the hippocampus. That's important because when you start looking at individuals who suffer with neurodegenerative diseases, really anything that falls under the umbrella term of dementia, let's say Alzheimer's, when their brains are essentially sliced after life and looked at, the creatine stores are looked at, they're always depleted in creatine. And it's really interesting because now that's being used as a way to, through fMRI testing, they're trying to essentially gauge how much creatine is stored in the brain as maybe while the person's still alive, who may be suffering with these dementia type diseases, as a way to determine if creatine supplementation may be one way, maybe not to prevent it, but to mitigate the increase in these different types of dementia, types of neurodegeneration. The reason I'm so, I guess, passionate about it is my wife, we did some genetic testing, kind of just more so fun and wanting to look at the BRCA gene in my wife to see if she had it. And we ended up, while she didn't have it, she did have an APOE4 allele. And so that's, for people who aren't aware, if you have the APOE4 gene, if you have one of them, passed down from one parent, it increases your risk 2 to 4 times for Alzheimer's. If you have both of them, it's pretty much a guaranteed you're going to get it, for lack of a better term. But anyway, so when I saw that Erica, my wife, had one of those, I started looking into ways to try and mitigate that as early as possible. So we're both in our 30s. Creatine
So
monohydrate.
did
Yeah,
you
go
have her
ahead.
retire from the NFL? So she stopped playing the NFL. So there's no more
Yes.
traumatic brain injury. You probably, she's not drinking 151 shots, and, sleeping 2 hours a night and drinking just massive energy drinks.
She's not doing that, and she's not as big as an NFL guy like yourself, but she is as scary, if not scarier, when she's upset. So yeah, she's tiny but fierce for sure.
Sounds like my wife.
Yeah, for sure.
Small but
So
mighty.
they keep us in place.
Yeah.
But creatine has this really impressive ability to act as an antioxidant. Now, when people hear antioxidants, they're usually not aware of what an antioxidant actually does. So just a little bit of background on this. We all have mitochondria. We all have their cells, but whether it's in the brain, throughout the body, but you're constantly producing free radicals. In a diseased state, your production of free radicals goes up. In exercise, when you start to exercise, the production of free radicals goes up. Your body, your cells, your mitochondria, these are the primary sources where you would find free radical production. They have antioxidants inside of them that help combat free radicals. They're known as endogenous antioxidants, so they're created inside of you. But if they're exposed to these free radicals for a prolonged period of time, your endogenous antioxidants are depleted. Those free radicals spill out, and then they start causing damage, whether that's DNA damage, protein damage, lipid damage to cell membranes. So there's a lot of issues that we call that oxidative stress. By providing the body with an exogenous antioxidant like creatine monohydrate, it's able to serve as an additional resource to keep those free radicals from spilling over. The brain is highly susceptible to free radical damage, oxidative stress. And so creatine, it for they're still not sure exactly why, but cerebral metabolism is really, really favorable for creatine storage. So the brain stores very high amounts of creatine. Maybe one of those reasons, one of the leading theories right now, is because it serves as a primary antioxidant in the brain. And one of the things that happens in this more disease state, like with Alzheimer's, whether or multiple sclerosis, is that these disease states, they start off, they deplete the endogenous antioxidant system, and then they deplete the exogenous antioxidants that you're feeding, whether that be creatine or some of these other ones. And then when there are no antioxidants left over, that's really when this disease, whatever it might be, manifests itself and kind of takes over. So this is where creatine really can provide a benefit for cognition. And one of the things I talked to at the collective, we were really had that collective kind of geared around the combat athlete jiu-jitsu. I mentioned, hey, if you're in jiu-jitsu, if you're in any kind of combatives, if you're in any kind of collision sport, rugby or football, you should be supplementing with creatine because it also has been shown to be fairly effective in mitigating the damage from TBIs or concussions because it's again serving as an antioxidant. One of the things that happens when there's brain damage is there's a breakdown in the blood-brain barrier, and these free radicals that are in the system, which shouldn't get to the brain, they have an opportunity to cross over and cause damage. And if there's an antioxidant there ready to go, like creatine, it can combat that, keep the damage mitigated.
I like I've told you numerous times, we started taking creatine in 1992, and I'd like to believe I'm the longest continuous creatine user on the planet, 5 to 10 grams consistently almost every day for over 30 plus years. And at the time we were looking at it more for like a performance aid, bigger muscles, whatnot. Then all of a sudden the research comes out with ATP and brain health and antioxidants. And I have to reach back and think that maybe some of the issues I sidestepped neurologically by taking creatine. I don't know what the net effect was, but I do know that a lot of the guys I played with are a lot more fucked up than me. I mean, if you guys listen to this podcast, maybe you disagree, maybe you don't, but based upon the scans and a lot of the information coming out, I mean, I really have always been a big advocate of taking creatine, not only for performance, but the cognitive effects are well documented. So if you're not taking it, I think you're leaving a lot on the table. And like you said, especially for the combat athletes and whatnot, they need to be doing this.
For sure. And just one more population that gets overlooked are women, specifically for around the perimenopause window. So women transitioning in their 40s into their 50s who might be about to be experiencing menopause or postmenopause. So we know that women, that the risk or a rate of depression is 2 times higher in women around that time, that the fluctuations in hormones cause increases in anxiety, depression. Also, the transition into menopause, there's a reduction of muscle mass as well as bone density. Creatine supplementation, a lot of this now being done in animal models, but it is getting translated now over to the human models. But creatine supplementation is one of the number one recommendations right now, specifically by a colleague of mine, Dr. Abby Smith Ryan, as one supplement that women who are in the menopause, perimenopause transition should be taking to help mitigate the effects of menopause. So that's one thing again. So, at least for me, I've got Erica, she knows this now because I'm about to say it, but I put 5 grams of creatine. I make her a tea every morning and I put 5 grams in there. She can't taste it. It's unflavored. But anyways, part of that is again for the cognitive side, but also understanding that women will go through this menopause transition at some point. And it should, based on again the research that's out there, should help with that transition, should help preserve muscle, help preserve bone density. So there's a wealth of data on creatine monohydrate. So if I had to put, again, whey protein aside, if I had to put my number one supplement, it would be make sure you have a good creatine monohydrate somewhere.
Awesome. Yeah. I mean, that's an easy one.
Yep.
So we got,
So.
we have multivitamin, we have
Yep.
glutamine, we have creatine. And obviously if you are protein deficient, a whey protein supplement. I do think for me personally on the whey protein stuff, I try to eat no more than 30% of my protein intake from liquid. There's definitely a big factor for chewing your food, starting digestion if you're just drinking shakes all the time. So no more than 30%, which, for me, if I eat 275, 300 grams of protein, looks like 250 gram shakes, which I tend to do in the supplement just to make it easier, but it's also faster absorption. So it works well in that kind of post-workout window.
For sure.
All right. So we got those three nailed. What other ones we got?
Yeah. So, usually when we look at supplements, it's like when I talk to people or research, it's going to be there's kind of three buckets we're looking at. It's like performance, cognitive and physical, body composition, muscle mass, or losing body fat. And then it's like metabolic slash longevity health. So far, I try the ones I'm talking about today, I'm trying to span those three buckets. It's because creatine's got metabolic benefits, it's got longevity benefits, it's performance benefits, it's also got body composition benefits. The next one, which goes hand in hand with creatine and the way it works, is betaine. Now, betaine is one of these supplements that not too many people are aware of. It's also known as TMG or trimethylglycine. And betaine, it got its name, it's found in beets, hence its name, betaine. It's just in the isolated nutrient that's found in beets. Now there's other benefits from beets, nitric oxide and some other things, but
I thought
what
at
makes
first what you were saying was butane, and I'm like, I like
yeah.
when, and I know it's the Zoom, and I started laughing when you said butane, and I was like, you mean you're like huffing butane out of lighters?
Yes, that's what I was talking about. It's probably that southern accent coming
Yeah.
through right now. Yeah.
So spell betaine, butane. Well, it's
Betaine, yeah.
betaine.
BETAINE. Yeah, and you're looking for a lot. It's usually betaine and anhydrase, and it comes 2 to 4 grams is what you're looking at per day. It's an osmolite. So just a little background on this. Have you ever, John, have you ever heard of the macromolecule crowding theory?
No, I have not heard of this.
So Dr. Tom actually made me aware of this, surprisingly. So I was reading a textbook, this a couple of years ago. There's a textbook I have from the early 2000s, and there's a chapter in there on why it's important to maintain cell size, specifically for hydration purposes.
Yes.
And that theory got put forward, and I went and looked to see who the author was, and it was Dr. Tom was the author of this chapter.
Inkledon?
Yes, yeah, blew my mind. Blew my mind. So
Dude, Tom used to write for all of these different publications and books and all this stuff. When I first met him, he was writing for like 20 different of these, like, there was a war of bodybuilding magazines, and it was like every week there was a new bodybuilding magazine, and Tom Inkledon was the guy that they like went to. And I think what he did is he probably wrote 10 articles and they just passed them around. But yeah,
just
like
circulated them.
Yeah. Like when I met him, he like started giving me all these books and this, and then I just finally was like, I'll just do what you say. Just tell me this. But yeah, so that's
a wealth of knowledge. He's one of those guys that, you know, you think you may have stuff figured out. You think you may be smart. And then you talk to someone like that, it's like, dang, again, you just don't know what you don't know. And he will make you aware of what you don't know. But
yeah. And then make fun of you and then proceed to drink you under the table. And he's like, hey, and I'm on my 75th shot, but I took this supplement that basically makes alcohol have no effect on me. I'm like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah. I saw that, the collective. So the real quick for the audience, and because this will make sense, you need to know the why before we talk about this supplement. So hydration, obviously really important, more so than just drinking water, but I'll bring that up here in a second as well. I think element plays a role in this.
Yeah.
So when anytime energy expenditure goes up, one of the things that happens is a byproduct of energy metabolism is heat. And that heat is generated in the cell, and that heat will cause dysregulation in the cell unless it gets out. Well, the way you get it out is by sweating. So you move the heat from in the cell to outside the cell, and then you have water outside the cell that we call extracellular liquid or water. And it takes that heat and moves it to the skin. And then when that sweat is evaporates, it takes the heat with it. So that's actually how you thermoregulate and cool yourself. Well, when your extracellular fluid is taken to the skin and evaporates, that extracellular fluid actually goes down. So one thing that'll happen is you have fluid in the cell called intracellular fluid that will move from in the cell to outside the cell to try and make up for that extracellular fluid you just lost. The issue, though, becomes that the cell gets smaller when that happens. And this is what's known as the macromolecule crowding theory. When the cell shrinks, all the organelles, the mitochondria, the ribosome, the Golgi apparatus, they essentially get crowded and they're not able to function as well. And so what we see from that is the different pathways that create ATP for us don't function as well. The cell becomes dysregulated, fatigue sets in, all these other cascades occur. So the argument then becomes, well, if we can maintain the size and structure of the cell, maintain the integrity of the cell, this would be beneficial for performance, but also for health, because the brain is also very susceptible to what's known as hypohydration. So people say dehydration. Dehydration is the process of losing water. Hypohydration is the state. So betaine is an osmolyte in that it is taken up by these cells. It increases the expression of something known as an aquaporin. So an aquaporin is literally a gate. Think of like a straw that you drink liquid out of. Your cells have these aquaporins around them. And when they're activated, they allow water to come in and it stretches the cell out. It's the same. Creatine actually does the exact same thing by drawing water into the cell. Sure. Creatine's also an osmolyte. Betaine does the same thing. And betaine, TMG, trimethylglycine, is constantly donating methyl groups to, again, things like homocysteine to keep it down and convert it over into methionine. So it not only has a metabolic benefit specifically for cardiovascular disease, but it also maintains the cell size. And one of the ways that we know in which way a cell gets bigger and stronger is through what's called transient hypertrophy. Mm-hmm. So anybody has ever experienced the pump, that's transient hypertrophy.
If you've done Jack Street, you know that we have certain days that are called transient hypertrophy days.
Yeah. Perfect. I mean, that's awesome, because that's exactly what you're talking. You probably have high volume there. Yep.
It's reps. Yeah. It's all short.
EFR.
Yeah. It's all, we'll use Tabata stuff, lighter weights. It's push pull, this, and it's small rest periods, high reps,
pump.
Just getting a nasty pump. But those transient hypertrophy days. And I had read a research article that talked about like once every 7 days having like a dedicated transient hypertrophy where it's just like, I'm going to try to get the skin to explode. And, so I started working those in, and I can't remember which Jack Street program it is. It was a couple cycles ago, but I actually had a day, and I was laughing because on the various programs that I write, and Hunter's asked me this numerous times, is what did the names mean? Mm-hmm. And what people don't realize is when you have multiple programs over multiple domains with different focuses, the only way I can keep everything straight is by adding unique names to things and naming cycles and having days in this. And then people come in and be like, well, you know, what's this density thing? And why are you doing density? And what, you know, I'll be like, dude, it's how I look at the program and that I think about it in this ways. And I don't think about things in terms of numbers. So if you said to me, you were like, hey, on this day on mandatory upper, we did this, this, and this. But then if you're on, you know, Johnny Watt and you're like, oh, that day we did this, it allows me to have like quicker recognition when talking to people about the training programs across multiple domains. So yeah, that transient hypertrophy, I read a bitch an article about it. If I find it, I'll post the link. But I'm glad you brought that up. Sorry.
No. Yeah, it's good. I love any pump. I mean, I don't know how you couldn't love that day. But what betaine does, it allows for acute transient hypertrophy. And anyone who knows physiology or anything about muscle building, when the cell experiences transient hypertrophy repeatedly, eventually that provides a stimulus for chronic hypertrophy because the cell's bigger. You could fit more proteins in there, myosin and actin. You could fit more mitochondria, more ribosomes for protein synthesis. So betaine does this really nice job of serving as that osmolite, as does creatine. So there's a synergistic effect there. Both of those have to be taken, though. It's not something you cycle. Yeah. It's not something that has immediate effects. It takes anywhere from probably about 2 to 4 weeks to start seeing anything occur.
Well, it's a saturation. And I remind people with creatine that, you know, oh, should I load it in this? I'm like, you can load it. But at the end of the day, if you're just taking enough, there'll be a saturation point and effect. I mean, similar we saw with beta-alanine, same thing with beta-alanine. Like you take it once, it's not going to do anything, but you need it in the system. And that's one of those saturation deals. So it's a saturation. Was this when people were taking beet powder? I remember beet powder was kind of
And that's actually, it's a pretty, it's a pretty effective supplement, but that's more for the nitric oxide purposes of it. Betaine, you have to take a lot of beetroot powder, or you'd have to eat a lot of beets to get any kind of appreciable betaine from it. So it's easier just to take the supplement.
So I'm going to tell you something kind of weird. those of you guys, I always recommend, not on the podcast, but like any of the private clients or anything I'm working with, I always tell people like, hey, if you go number two, always glance in the toilet to see, you know, how it looks. Like
I know where you're going, because like, I love beets.
Yeah. So take some consistency, like think about it like this, like, and you should be fairly an expert on your BMs.
Your poop.
Yeah. You have to be, I don't mean to be a connoisseur, but like you should always glance in and be like, oh, that one was kind of loose. That was this. And then kind of do this, like, what did I eat today? What have I done for training? And kind of do this. Have I eaten? And one of the biggest ones with, you know, having regular bowel movements is making sure you're hydrated. The hydration thing, especially in the summer, it's 100 degrees here. All of a sudden you go in the bathroom and it's like you're, you know, pooping out a Triscuit. Like you're probably dehydrated. And then, you know, if you do that consistently, you're going to probably end up with some issues and hemorrhoids and other things. So I've always, and this comes from Dr. Tom, like, hey, you go, I'd always look in the toilet. I ate a ton of beets and I was like on this huge beet kick because, you know, Roy G. Biv, you know, a red, blue, green, orange, indigo, violet, like constantly looking for different colors to add. So I bought all these beets, red beets, purple beets, and the gold beets. And so I started eating beets and I glanced in the toilet and everything was like real interesting, like purple. And I thought it was blood.
Me too. Same experience. I had the same story.
I had this like panic attack, you know, because if you have blood in your stool,
freaking out.
I mean, let's say, you know, I mean, if you lift weights long enough and, you know, you might end up with a hemorrhoid. It's like, it's not the end of the world. You know, pregnant women deal with them from a lot of pushing. And if, you know, especially to Mark Bell and those guys and, you know, Ed Cohen talk about the squat technique of spreading their taint, like they're driving their knees out and they're trying to like spread their taint, which to me is the single worst cue you can ever give to somebody. What we teach is big toe on the ground, squeeze the glutes, try to crack a walnut between your butt cheeks, fight off prison sex, whatever you want it is. But I'm constantly like working on like the pelvic floor and pulling everything in, because that's spreading. That's how you get hemorrhoids. I'm fairly convinced. So I go, I glance in the toilet. I know it's gross. I look and I'm like, oh my God, there's like a massive amount of blood in my stool. And I'm like freaking out in this. And I tell my wife and she's like, you're going to have to go to the, internal, you know, you're gonna have to book this and this and, you know, go see all these people. And then like, I'm kind of freaking out and I'm like, I did eat beets. And then she like looks at me and she's so, and I'm like it's probably happened, but I, yeah. And then I just have to remember, like, if I eat beets, and it might not be that next day or like immediately after, but like the next day it's going to have some stuff. So if you consume a ton of beets and you glance and don't get nervous if you think there's much,
your poop will be red.
Yes.
Yeah. And I thought I had butt cancer. So I'm like freaking out. And my wife was like, you idiot. Yeah. She was like, it's the beets.
Well, I'm glad that you and I are the same fucking dipshit, because I looked at it and was like, oh my God, I'm going to have like colon cancer.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
Oh shit, dude. Yeah.
That's awesome.
But yeah, it's happened to me here in Texas only, where, you know, like I drink a ton of water. I'm constantly putting Element. And then all of a sudden, you know, you go in the bathroom and you're like, shit, I'm severely dehydrated. And the way that I know I'm dehydrated is I will always get an adductor cramp. And then also if number two is kind of rough, I know that's like, you know, you got to start just pounding water. And, but yeah, I mean, poop, people forget, like, most of the people that I've run into that have some poor form of BM GI tract issues, I think it really comes down to poor water absorption.
Yeah. Let's hit that real quick. It's not a supplement I was going to talk about, but since we are on water absorption and hydration and for those. So one thing I do in the morning is always have at room temp about 12 to 16 ounces of water. And I always throw about a fourth of a teaspoon of Celtic salt in there. I always get asked Celtic salt, pink Himalayan, you know, whatever.
You know what? I did a deep dive on the salt. The Celtic salt to me tastes the best. Mm-hmm. The Himalayan sea salt, it's completely dependent on where you get it from. I saw a bunch of analysis where it was coming out of China and the Himalayas, and like the amount of toxic metals and crazy shit that were in the salt. So, you know, and then you got to think about like the Celtic salt, and there's a bunch of, you know, but it's, I would, whatever salt you're doing, do a Google search and see if somebody, find the source and find if somebody's done a review, because there's a ton of them. I do like, it's in a blue kind of pouch and it's called Celtic sea salt. I think it tastes the
same
best.
One I have.
Yeah. I love it. It tastes the best of all of them.
Yeah. And so, and if you look at, you know, people ask about it, I'm like, well, first off, as long as you're throwing a little salt in there, about 500 milligrams, you know, 500 milligrams to a gram, people ask, well, this is beyond this podcast. This would be for another one or for a Rob Wolf, but you know, salt bad. No, it's not bad. How much? I usually recommend 2 to 5 grams if you're active, maybe even higher if you're dependent on body size and very active. But for most people probably listening to this, 2 to 5 grams or 2000 to 5,000 milligrams.
Yep.
Cause that's usually the units that it comes in, but usually I'll throw in about 500 to 1,000 milligrams of Celtic salt. The reason I like Celtic salt, again, if it's sourced well, is it doesn't have as many trace minerals as pink Himalayan salt, but it has more of the trace minerals that it does contain. So the reason you want, though, these minerals in the water is simply due to osmosis. So if you chug a lot of water that is diluted, no minerals included in it, it'll just pull those minerals from the body, dump them in the gut, essentially, and then you'll excrete that on out. So what's not nice with adding minerals like Celtic salt or Rob Wolf, you've mentioned Element. Element is awesome. I never had it until we came out to the collective. It's September, burning up, very hot, ton of Element available. If Rob Wolf listens to this, shout out to him, because that is an awesome product.
Yeah, no, we have, they send it to the gym. And we have boxes of it, and I like force it on the kids. Like not only my kids, but the Brazilians as well. They know, and to the point where like I just ended up getting Rob to like start sending it to their houses, just because I'm like, I don't need this much.
Dosed well too.
Yeah.
It's dosed very well. Rob's obviously a brilliant guy. He's done Done his work, done his research on Element. If you look, I think it's near a gram for the pouch, of sodium. So for those listening, Element's awesome. Like I said, I throw in some Celtic salt, but also throw into that beverage as well. I learned this from Sten Efferding, but like 3 to 5 ounces of the bitter cranberry juice. This isn't like Welch's cranberry juice. This is like old school organic cranberry juice. And the reason for that
It's
is
not cranberry juice cocktail. It's the tart cranberry.
that's right. Very bitter. Yeah, it's not something you want to drink, but 3 to 5 ounces of that. And the reason for that, so talking about hydration, creatine, betaine, and then I've got this hydration mix with cranberry juice, 3 to 5 ounces supplies iodine. And the reason you want iodine, so your thyroid gland produces a hormone known as thyroxine, but the one that we really care about is its conversion to triiodothyronine. So it iodine and thyroxine marry essentially to give us triiodothyronine, and that is the master regulator of all metabolic processes in the cell. So if you have sufficient triiodothyronine, then metabolism will be ramped up. It'll be functioning highly efficient. People will go to the doctor and get B12 shots, and they'll talk about how their thyroid glands are underactive, or and I'll just tell them, well, maybe you're just not giving them the precursor for them to be active, which is iodine. Our diets tend to be really poor in iodine, and 3 to 5 ounces of cranberry juice will get that. So I just mix all that up with the betaine and creatine every morning.
Yeah, no, I remember reading evolutionary biology
Yep.
piece about, iodine consumption and all the, we're people from the sea, and obviously iodine
Yeah.
in sea in seaweed and fish and other places, but yeah, like consuming iodine, but there is a too much effect. So,
Oh yeah, for sure. For sure. That's why it's 3 to 5 ounces and you're good.
yeah, no, I was pretty consistent on the I drank, the cranberry juice for years. I mean, that was one of Zangus's, like, he had these things, like they were fucking awful, but they were called beef pills. So they were like these beef, I don't know what they were. They were these chalky pills we had to take, and there was creatine. And then he was real big on cranberry, on just the natural cranberry juice as like healthy for like the liver and the kidneys and like a detox thing. So yeah, I always took it. And then it was funny, one time I got tested by Dr. Tom and he's like, "You're allergic to cranberry juice." And I'm like, "Shit." So I had to back off a little bit, but I'll throw that back in. But yeah, I just end up eating seaweed. And there's also some iodine pills that you can get because the water, the issue we're getting to is, most people are drinking water out of their taps, which is fucking insane. So I recommend like some form of filtration on the water. We have a filtration on the house. And then I also, because I'm fucking nutcase, the water that comes out of the tap, I filter it again in a, one of those big, it's not a Brita, but it's a different one. Just to be
One
able
of the
to,
pitchers.
yeah, just because, the leaching plastic and the BPAs and all the environmental shit in the water. There's some cheap tests that you can get on if you go online to be able to test your water supply. I recommend everybody get those and just test your water just to see the quality. Here in Austin, obviously it's going through, plastic pipes and into the house and all this. And so just being able to do some double filtration is good. But when you do all that filtration, it strips a lot of the natural minerals out. So there's some, trace minerals that you can put back in the water, and then also iodine and or other different ways. But something to think about that, the water and the food that we're consuming today is not at all as nutrient dense as it was 100 years ago. So, I mean, it's a question I get all the time. Why do I have to take all these supplements? Why do I have to do this and this? It's like, because the food supply and the water is no longer nutrient dense like it used to be. And, what we've seen over the course of human evolution. So you can either like, deal with it and accept that we're living in a modern age, or you can not. And then, sickness and illness comes from all of a sudden, you're low on something and it's not a big deal today, but you're low on something for 10 or 20 years. Now, all of a sudden, the net gain effect is a very, very real thing. Or
It's
net, sorry,
exposure over
net
time.
loss. Yeah, net loss.
Exposure over time to these deficiencies are where issues arise for sure. So coming off betaine, the next thing for sure, everybody should, for the most part, and this it's What's tough when talking about supplements is not having context in which we're talking about it. Assuming you're a healthy individual, maybe even you have some cardiometabolic issues, maybe you're hyperlipidemia, maybe you have hypertension. But within context, do your own homework, everybody that's listening to this. But I usually recommend a solid fish oil because EPA and DHA, so that's eicosapentaenoic acid and docosahexaenoic acid, these are essential fatty acids. They're also known as resolvents. It's a family, it's fairly new in terms of being studied and classified as a resolvent. But what's fascinating about EPA and DHA is that the brain seems to be highly receptive to these fatty acids. So they serve, fatty acids can serve as a source for energy, but they also are, EPA and DHA specifically do are great anti-inflammatories. It's always been kind of my thought that all cardiometabolic disease stems from chronic low-grade inflammation. So trying to keep inflammation low that's not derived from exercise. And then, but getting beyond, a lot of people are aware of the anti-inflammatory aspects, cardiometabolic health aspects of these essential fatty acids. But there's some really cool work coming out showing that as we age, one of the things that happens, men or women, is that we become what is known as anabolic resistant. And what we want to maintain is anabolic sensitivity to these various pathways. And so EPA and DHA, one of the things that they do is that they maintain that anabolic sensitivity so that we can maintain muscle mass. They decrease myostatin. So myostatin is like a switch that turns off muscle growth. It has an inverse relationship with something known as mTOR, mammalian targeted rapamycin. So these cells have both myostatin, which turns off mTOR. mTOR is the signal that tells a cell to grow. And so
Where
EPA.
does foliostatin fit into that? I always thought foliostatin was like the kind of the gas, and myostatin was the brake.
Yeah, it's a good question. There's another. It's not foliostatin. It's called Dexator, and it's like a new enzyme that's been found that may be even more of relevance than mTOR. It's really tough to try and figure out where like every little enzyme fits in. I know that the most research or the research I've paid attention to. The focus has been on a couple key enzymes. It's been mTOR, myostatin, and then another one called AMPK, adenosine monophosphate kinase. So, but I'm not sure. Not sure.
On the fish oil, there are so many different variations, and there's so many different companies producing it. I mean, there's pills, there's liquids. I mean, there's a million different varieties in this. Then, on the krill oil now, they're obviously doing the krill, but then they're also synthesizing it off of, like, is it seaweed or
Yeah, algae.
algae. I mean, and then there's obviously there's cold pressed fish, the EPA, and then there's algae in this. I mean, what's like an easy, like, reference point if somebody was going to go online and get fish oil today? Like what should they be looking for? What should they look to avoid?
Yeah, good question. So any good, so fish oil, fatty acids, they are susceptible to heat, light. So really two things that should stand out, three things if you have the money for it. The number one is that it should come in a dark bottle to protect it from light. Number two, when you look on the back, it shouldn't just be fish oil. It should come with an antioxidant. Specifically, a good fish oil will have vitamin E in there because it's a fat soluble antioxidant. And since these are fatty acids, they require a fat soluble antioxidant so that they don't oxidize. Meaning that if it's just fish oil for the listeners, there is a chance that that fish oil is already oxidized, that you would not get a benefit from it. You would literally just be getting the calories from it. So you want to make sure there's an antioxidant available. Again, vitamin E would be the most, the one that makes the most sense. And then for your really high quality fish oil, it should be refrigerated, but it's obviously going to cost more if it's a refrigerated type. But as long as it comes in a dark colored bottle, and as long as there's a vitamin E in there, usually it's going to be a good source for the most part. And of course, there's ways to, there's different stamps on there, CMG, CMP, that show it's been third party tested for quality. So those are the things. Looking, and you're trying to get 1 to 3 grams of EPA and DHA. specifically trying to get about a gram a day of EPA. So you may see on the bottle and it says you're getting 1,000 milligrams of fish oil. And it'll say that on the front, but you need to flip it over on the back and it should have the breakdown and should say EPA. You know, it'll probably say EPA 500 milligrams, DHA 500 milligrams. So collectively, it's 1,000 milligrams. And that's what they show on the front of the bottle. So if that's what you're getting, you would need to take two servings to get that 1,000 milligrams or 1 gram of EPA. But that's really what you're shooting for, 1 to 3 grams there per day. So it serves as a resolvent. And the other supplement I would recommend taking in conjunction with it is astaxanthin. It's one of my lab is the leading lab in the US on this. We've got a sport Astaryl Nutrition Network developed with the main company that produces astaxanthin, that is Astaryl. So we're doing some pretty cool stuff with that, looking at astaxanthin from a cognitive, physical performance, metabolic, I mean, just the whole range. Astaxanthin has a synergistic effect with EPA and DHA, which is why people recommend krill oil. So krill oil already has astaxanthin and it has EPA and DHA already in the phospholipid form, which essentially increases its bioavailability. So if you want to take krill oil, that's fine. The one downside to krill oil is usually you don't get enough astaxanthin. For astaxanthin, you're looking for 6 to 12 milligrams a day to take. And if you take krill oil, you're probably only getting 1 to 2 milligrams a day. But astaxanthin is the strongest, most powerful antioxidant that we are aware of. Most antioxidants, we already talked about how they work, but most antioxidants, they're secluded to an area, meaning they can work in the cell, they can work out of the cell, but they usually can't work in multiple areas. Astaxanthin spans, its structure allows it to span the mitochondrial membrane, the cell membrane, and it can fight free radicals in the cell, outside the cell, pretty much everywhere. So
is there a time of day for the astaxanthin and for the, I mean, or is it just like you just need to take it? Is it better taken with a meal, empty stomach, and whatnot?
yeah, so if you're going to take astaxanthin or EPA DHA, astaxanthin does well with a fat. So any type of, if you're gonna, it's best taken with a meal that has some type of fat in it, because it is fat soluble. It needs a fat transporter. But again, if it's sourced well, I think it's called Doublewood, or I think it's called Doublewood, the company. They source theirs from Astaryl. They put a fat in there with the astaxanthin when they source it. But yeah, so anyways, it's a very powerful antioxidant. I recommend everybody, a lot of the power athlete guys that I've talked to, men and women, I got them on it. They're seeing big improvements in whether it be their lipids and cholesterol. I mean, there's just a wealth of data on how astaxanthin works specifically. So yeah, I'm a big fan of it. And again, taking it with EPA and DHA, it seems to work synergistically in the brain and maintain prevent oxidative stress from occurring there. Astaxanthin, we're seeing it improves fat oxidation rates. So think about fat burning. It lowers lactate during exercise, submaximal exercise. So essentially, lactate in itself, a good thing. Lactate can be used as a precursor. And one of the supplements I was going to talk about, but just due to time, was lactate. Taking lactate sodium, 2 to 4 grams a day, it serves as a glucogenic precursor. So a fuel. Anybody who's ever gotten the runner's high, the reason that happens is because you produce lactate in the muscle. The brain feeds off lactate. You get a dopamine release from that lactate in the brain. That's where the runner's high comes from. So, but anyway, so astaxanthin's been shown to lower lactate, which is a marker, an indirect marker for fatigue during exercise. So, anyways, there's a lot of benefits there from astaxanthin supplementation.
Awesome, dude. Oh, that's great. Yeah, no, I'm a big fan. Since, you know, coming to the or the collective and presenting on it, I've added it in. I messed with the krill oil, but then ended up just getting the access
Yeah, astaxanthin.
astaxanthin.
Yeah.
And the one thing I wasn't doing was I stopped taking the fish oil.
Yeah.
And now that you're sitting here, I'm like going through and I'm like, damn, I don't know why. I mean, I think what I was doing was I was taking the krill oil. I ran out of that. And then when you gave your presentation, I started taking that. And I don't think I put two and two together that the krill oil was probably covering me for both. And, you know, so it's one of these things too. And I know this happens with everybody with supplements. You take something and you feel pretty good and you run out and maybe you don't buy it right away. Or, you know, what I tend to do is buy like 4 months at a time. And then I forget to reorder. And I'm like, oh, I feel fine. And then you're like, oh, wait a minute. Yeah. And then all of a sudden you like come up. And that's really the precipice of this conversation is what's the definitive, and we'll put it up and like, hey, this is the recommendation. This is what you should take. And and we'll do an article on a supplement. And then when you come out, we'll do a nice deep dive on all of this stuff. All right. So
yeah, it'd be great.
Just to recap, we got glutamine, we got a whey, we got a creatine. We have our betaine, Celtic sea salt, cranberry juice, element, fish oil, and now the astaxanthin.
Yeah. And creatine, if you, I don't know, maybe you mentioned creatine, but creatine's at the top of that list. So
yeah, yeah, it's up there.
Yeah. I mean, obviously there's a million, John, we could talk about. There's a lot of research. We don't have to go down it, but on rhodiola, rosea, beta hydroxybutyrate, the ketone I talked about, the collective, we're doing a lot of research on that. Sodium lactate.
I'm taking Duffin's version.
Oh yeah, yeah. Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So he sent me that.
Shout out to Duffin.
Yeah, he's so I've been taking that for pre-workout and kind of like I get up in the morning, I take that first thing in the morning and drink his stuff.
Is that the VasoBlitz?
Yeah, the VasoBlitz. And
Vaso.
It's kind of interesting. Like I at first I was getting like a gnarly pump, and now I don't think I'm getting the same pump out of it. But it was today we were doing a superset of some cable flies to push-ups. Just trying to like, you know, today was a leg day, but so what I'll do is I'll go super heavy with all of our lower body stuff and I'll kind of do a lighter upper accessory. And the next time we come in, we go super heavy on the upper and more low leg accessory. And just trying to constantly play with all of these different templates and see how this one works and test this. And it's like a constant lab. So it's, but yeah,
that's awesome though.
Yeah. The VasoBlitz has been kind of interesting. Like I didn't like, I get like a gnarly chest pump out of it for where like all of a sudden I'm like, oh shit, dude. Look at that. That guy's
check this out.
Yeah, this dude's almost pointing down. I got this like little flaming skull pointing down. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, no, it's good.
I've never taken his VasoBlitz, but you know, we were talking at the collective, Chris Duffin and I got talking, and it's half of the things we're talking about right now are in that VasoBlitz. The Rhodiola Rosea, it's adaptogens, really a lot of recent review came out on it in 2023. Grant Tinsley led that and showed there's a lot of performance benefits from taking that, about 1 to 2 grams a day. And he's got sodium lactate in that. I remember that because that was one of the things I said, hey, that's for cognition purposes. Sodium lactate is something you want to take. So, it's well dosed.
One of the other easy ones, and I recommend all the clients and anybody I look at their blood work, if cholesterol tends to be on the little higher elevated deal, just taking B6 and some niacin, doing a little bit of niacin flush, especially before bed. You have to kind of titrate it up because don't take a ton. You'll end up laying there in bed and your face is going to feel like it's going to explode. So there's a bit of a loading, but being able to get up to, you know, a decent amount, I think it was like 3 to 5 grams. Start at one working up, that does incredible things for in terms of like lowering cholesterol and really just fat oxidation and
for
being able to clear that. So, and that's an easy one.
Yeah. Astaxanthin, you know, going back to it real quick on the cholesterol, because several of the guys, I won't say their names in case they want me using them, but on the power athlete side who deal with issues with their cholesterol, and I get them on astaxanthin and it lowers at least the LDL and, and we talked, there's some research maybe on the ApoB side and that it improves that as well. And they ask why. The liver is really what dictates that LDL in terms of numbers. And so astaxanthin lowers an enzyme called the liver X receptor, which helps shuttle out excess LDL cholesterol. You essentially excrete it, and that helps bring those levels down. So, so astaxanthin, niacin, as you mentioned, is a good one. There's some things you could do with whole food. Olive oil has something in there called oleocanthal that helps lower that as well.
Yeah, no, so and also olive oil increases well-being. Like there was a really bitchin' study that found that people that consume olive oil in high amounts are more positive, happier, and have a better sense of wellness than people that don't, which to me, they were like, oh, how do you prove that? I'm like, they legitimately gave people surveys and they found that the people that consume the most olive oil. So I'm like, bringing olive oil and everything.
Yeah. Just let's go.
Yeah. I was like, well, It's probably been years since I've told the story, but back when I was trying to put on weight and was really struggling with it, you know, and I just kept ramping up my calories. I started doing shots of olive oil. Yeah. So what I would do is I would bring this little shot glass and I'd go to a restaurant and like fill it up with olive oil and I put a little salt on it, knock it back real quick. And, you know, two shots of olive oil, I forgot what it came out to be.
Well, like, that would be, yeah.
It'd be shot. An ounce. Yeah, I can't remember what it worked out, but it was something like.
That's got to be over 100 grams of fat.
Yeah. No, it was.
That's like 1,000 calories.
Yeah, it was like, I can't remember what it was, but it was like 187 calories per gram. Yeah, I just remember two shots of olive oil was enough to like push me over what I needed to try to get to my 7,000 calories, which like kind of going back and doing the math, like there's a kind of a certain amount of protein that you can consume. And it's somewhere between like a gram to a gram and a half, where like, there's really not a benefit outside of that. You know, the right. research is pretty conclusive. It's like 0.8 to 1 gram per pound of body weight. And you can even push it up to like a gram and a half if you're training hard and you're young and, you know, there's all these different factors involved, but anything outside of that. So you're kind of limited on how much protein. It's also extremely satiating. And then you're in this kind of fat thing where like you can really ramp up calories with fat, but at the end of the day, you ramp up fat too high. And now all of a sudden you start,
diarrhea.
Yeah. Well, you get diarrhea, but also body composition.
It starts.
Just the body comp, when the fat gets too high, the body comp, you just get kind of lunchy. So like the only micro or macronutrient that you can really fucking play with and push up is carbs. So there's kind of like the amount of protein and then there's fat. And then on that side, when, you know, I'm looking at like, how do I eat X amount of calories? I can only eat so much fat. I can only eat so much protein. And then I look at the carb piece and it's pretty interesting where, you know, the leaner you are and the more muscle you carry, the more insulin sensitive you are and the more carbs you can consume. So if you go back and you look
at it. Sounds like metabolic flexibility, John.
It does sound like metabolic flexibility, which is what I'm really kind of getting to very quick or slowly. As you know me, I'm like taking the long way around.
No, it's good.
But that idea of metabolic flexibility, and all you have to do is go back and look at any of the like the early bodybuilding magazines from the 70s or from the 80s and also from the early 90s, these pro bodybuilders were consuming 800, 1,000, 1,200 grams of carbohydrate in a single day. And, you know, real like kind of low on the fat, maybe 50, 60, 70 grams of fat at max and 300 grams of protein. And these dudes were growing like weeds.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I've had people be like, hey, can I gain muscle, build gobs and gobs of muscle on a ketogenic diet? And I'm like, no.
Yeah.
What ketogenic diets are really good at is maintaining your muscle mass. If you're happy with your muscle mass and you want to lose fat, you know, pulling the carbs out in this, but there's a very real effect of carbohydrates in terms of muscle building. And I know
for sure
biohackers the world over are going to roll over in their grave. How dare you? But it is extremely difficult to put on massive amounts of muscle with a low carb diet. You know, one of the guys.
Well, what's the most anabolic hormone in the body?
Insulin.
Yep.
Yeah. Insulin. Yep. I mean,
can't get around that.
So I've been working with a client and he's older and, you know, he's had blood sugar issues in this and we need to put muscle on him. And so there's a real interesting kind of balance of like, all right, you know, ketogenic diet and we'll use some anabolic stuff, but he has to track his glucose. So I'm like, hey, you know, we can do some carb refeeds, but you know, we need aerobic work. I need you to monitor your blood sugar. You got to wear your CGM. We got to look at the numbers. And if they're relatively good and we can keep you in, you know, a very kind of low state with, you know, using non-media glucose uptake to be able to pull it down and, you know, what this looks like, then what we can do is we can put some carb refeeds into this thing, which I think with the way we're training and some of the stuff we're doing is going to fucking explode. And, you know, making sure sleep is dialed and that your hormones are looking good and that, you know, you're consistent in your protein, you're not underfed, you know, minimizing alcohol, minimizing oxidative stress. I mean, making sure the supplements are good. So it's pretty interesting as I've been, you know, working with this client, who's kind of a you know, high value dude. He, trying to tell him, I'm like, you know, muscle is the end result effect of doing all these other things right. People just don't randomly stumble upon a whole bunch of lean body mass. Like I always love when you talk to these women, like, oh, I can't touch a weight. I'll just put on muscle and look like a bodybuilder. And I'm like, shit, Where did you get this? Yeah. I've been trying to do this my whole life, and you just naturally have it. But, you know, being like, you know, muscle is, you know, it's expensive to keep. It's hard to get. But it's the greatest predictor of longevity and health. So if we can maximize all these other things, all of a sudden the muscle is going to be our receipt for if we've done all the right things. And
who's the one that you guys had on? Who, man, she just hit, it's a female.
Yeah.
She hits
Gabrielle Leon. Yeah.
She just had her book. I love the message she puts out.
Yeah, no, I'm, she's done a really good job of, you know, packaging up some things that we've been saying for, you know, over 10 years, which is, you know, we don't necessarily have a fat problem. I think we have a muscle problem.
Under muscled. Yep.
Yeah. Which I've been saying for years, just because we would have people come to us and they'd be like, hey, you know, I need to lean out. And so we'd end up leaning them out and then they just didn't have it. Like it didn't look good because there was no muscle underneath.
Yeah.
Like if you're carrying a high amount of muscle and all of a sudden we cut you down to sub 10% body fat and everybody looks good. If you're lunchy and you don't carry a lot of muscle and you cut your body fat down, all that is just, it looks like chewed bubble gum and they just look skinny. And I recently saw a client that I hadn't worked with, but saw him recently and he's gone on and using Ozempic. And the only place he seemed to have lost weight is in his neck. So there's a lot of like slimming of this, like the head looks kind of, it just was weird. And I told him, I was like, hey man, because he asked me about it. I was like, hey, it works for the effect, but you have to continue to lift weights and eat a high protein diet. Like I'm, you know, I'm fine that you're taking it. I think he thought I was going to admonish him. I'm like, dude, you do you. Like at the end of the day, you're an adult. You make your own decisions. I'm going to tell you that there isn't a health protocol that doesn't look like lifting weights and eating a high protein diet and being able to maximize all these other things. I mean, you know, what we're talking about in terms of supplementation are really ancillary aids in our training effect. The word supplement, to supplement something, means that, you know, hey, I have this already fucking dialed in and now I'm taking something to supplement. These aren't primaries. But what we've done is thrown a pretty good number out pretty good recommendations here of like, these are not supplements. These are ancillary aids that you can add to your arsenal to increase your training effect, increase your health. And it's not like, oh, I'm going to, you know, and I've joked about this for years of like, most people get their supplement recommendations from their bros. Hey, bro, I'm taking this and I feel great. Oh, great. My bro's taking this. Now I'm going to take this. Yeah. And I've never subscribed to that. I mean, I was always big on making sure that if I'm getting micronutrient testing done, what I'm deficient on, or taking some real world advice from people like Dr. Hunter Waldman, who are actually doing the research, because nothing that you list here that involved me having to go to Thailand and buy anything weird or, you know, get online and create a burner account so I can go on the dark web. I mean, it's all stuff that you can get relatively easy. My only caveat is make sure you buy it from a high quality place like a Thorne. You don't have to buy it from Thorne, but don't be very leery of going on Amazon, finding the cheapest one, having it show up and be like, I don't know what the fuck I'm taking.
Yeah. Yeah. You couldn't say it better. I mean, keeping it all in context. That's, you know, again, tough to do when we're talking to a broad audience. Context is key still, but just going back to that continuum that me and you had talked about to start this podcast off, which is, you know, it's supplements are simply that. They're just to supplement everything else. I don't think they're going to get you to what everybody's hoping it'll get you. I think it can fill in some gaps, especially if there's some sickness occurring, can get us over filling those gaps to get us to wellness, to start building off of that. But it's not going to be, you're going to be highly disappointed if the habits that are there for putting on muscle, for living a better life, aren't already there and you're spending all the money on supplements.
Yeah. Well, no, it's a weird thing where people feel like, hey, you know, the supplement is allowing me to kind of, you know, the building's falling over, but I'm going to take supplements to kind of prop it up. And it doesn't work though. Like there's no way to out supplement a shitty diet. There's no way to out supplement poor sleep, and there's no way to out supplement, you know, shitty food quality. You know, the food that we're eating is already micronutrient deficient compared to what it was 100 years ago. And I've heard, Lane Norton, you know, try to dispel this myth, you know, and he's looking at, you know, hey, like, you know, based upon the research, but we also have almost 30 years of research from Dr. Tom. who's done micronutrient testing on every professional athlete and like, you know, tens of thousands of data points that lead us to believe that everybody's deficient in these things. And when you go back and you look at them doing, you know, soil samples on soil quality and this, I mean, it just, it makes sense. I mean, it's the majority of the, you know, food that are bringing in has been overly grown, overly processed, and it's just not as nutrient dense as it used to be. So you can either bitch about it and figure out like, hey, I'm going to supplement, or, you know, you just continue to eat. I mean, I wish we lived in a place where I could just recommend just eat a diverse diet and you're going to be fine. But unfortunately, we're not living in that universe anymore.
Yep. Couldn't agree more.
So how's the training coming? How's the jits?
Any love it. You know, I'm still dealing with that.
The knee?
I got that grade 2 LCL sprain, but I'm getting better. It's just anything in the transverse, any kind of rotation, still a little bit of pain there. But talking with some of the PTs and the Power Athlete Network and trying to get it better. So hopefully I'm back training beginning of January. Right now it's just all drilling, but there's no rolling or any kind of live action type stuff, which is fun. I mean, hitting groundstone, love it. Just did a mandatory lower yesterday, got upper today. So
nice.
Super pumped. Yeah, I love that program.
Yeah, thank you. No, it's a good one. Yeah, no, the training's been good. I got, like I said, I got my blue belt, which was fun, kind of unexpectedly. And the one thing I did notice is now when I go to class and I go for, you know, we'll go for rolls, I feel like dudes aren't fighting like it's ADCC finals anymore.
Yeah.
So I realized that as a white belt, when I go on a roll with these guys, you know, that were, let's say they were a blue, a purple, or a brown belt or whatever, like they were literally going like ego style like this. And so I rolled with the dude recently and I was like, yo, man, like that was, you know, it was a much better exchange. And I made the joke. I'm like, what are you like? Not as worried about getting submitted. He's like, yeah, you're not a white belt anymore. I'm not as fucking worried about it. So,
yeah.
But yeah.
Well, you got some great training partners. Cause like I said, when we did that seminar and I went with Felipe, I wanted to burn my gi and quit because I had, he in 5 minutes mounted me. And for those who don't know, I'm a purple belt, which I don't know if that means anything to the listeners, but I've been training a little bit of time. But this guy, he's what, 24?
Yeah, just turned 24.
All right. He mounted me repeatedly, and I knew it was coming, and then just cross-collar choked me probably 6 or 7 times in 5 minutes. I've never been just had my tail handed to me, and I wanted to go and burn my gi, and I was like, what just happened? I had to text Durrett, and I just like needed someone to talk me down. He was like, dude, those are NFL guys. We're like Division 3, maybe.
Yeah, no, they're, he's like number 3 in the world. I mean, one of the best. Yeah. I mean, you know,
I don't know what I was thinking.
Yeah, his training partner's Victor. I mean, after you told me that story, we were at class and, you know, we were like kind of, I think we had like 10 minutes left. So we were going to get like 2 5-minuters. And Philippe's like, oh, coach, you know, let's go. And I'm like, all right. And, you know, I thought I was going to be real smooth. He like goes to like pull guard. I'd like basically broke him down, put my hand on his hip. And I was going to try to fucking knee slice him and just fucking go right in and try to pass his guard. And he fucking waited on me, grabbed my collar, grabbed my sleeve and kicked me in the hip. And basically fucking swept me right on top into mount and fucking cross-collared me. And I was like, fucking redo. So we did it again. He proceeded to do the exact same thing 4 times in a row in 5 minutes. And it had the same net effect to the point where I was so mad driving home. I'm like driving home, not listening to music. And so then I started texting our group chat. I'm like, you know, Fleet beat up on me. And then Victor's like, come tomorrow at 11 and we'll go over this. So I show up at 11 and Victor's like, what did he do? And he showed me and he's like, okay, here's the problem. He's like, you're coming at him 90-90. He goes, you can't go 90-90 on Fleep. He's like, I only want you to attack him at 45s. So the minute that you get perpendicular or parallel to him, like you're fucked. So you got to go. So now it's like everything I do, he's like, in the minute he turns, you got to keep turning. And it was really funny, like, but it was extremely impactful sitting down with those guys who are, you know, they're pros and they're the best in the world at what they do. But now all of a sudden he's talking about it in terms of angles, which is an NFL player. Like I never played a dude nose to nose. I was 2/3 inside out. I was always trying to catch angles on people, you know, just be able to redirect them and hit them. And so as they started kind of talking about it, I realized this is the evolution, you know, as a white belt, you're just kind of trying to survive. And then you get to kind of blue, and now all of a sudden you kind of know a little shit, but you don't really know. And as you get in this progression, now all of a sudden there's all of these intricacies and pieces and this, and now you're talking about angles. I was just got back from Vegas last night. You know, Victor fought in that UFC Fight Pass. And, you know, he went up against this dude, Big Dan, who's, you know, 6'6", 290. And, you know, the guy put his head on him, was driving him around the mat, It ends up on the ground. And that guy gassed himself for 10 minutes trying to pass Victor's guard. Victor was on his side, like diamond, you know, like knee shields. I mean, the kid was raised with Shanji and Salo Hibero trying to pass his fucking guard. Like Shanji in 20 years never had a single dude in competition pass his guard. And this is like who raised Victor. So like this dude wasn't going to pass his guard and like, you know, went to like full guard and this. I mean, he's trying everything and the dude fucking gassed himself. It goes to OT. The guy's still trying. All of a sudden they end up on the ground. Victor wrestles up and I got to text you the picture. But Victor wrestles up and ends up on mount. And the poor dude was so gassed. He just like put his arm out and Victor got an American. Oh, dude,
I've been there.
And the hilarious part is the look on the dude's face. Everybody's been there. I looked and I knew exactly. And I was ringside. I mean, I was mat side right there and watched it all went down. But it was really cool to be that close and see really high level jiu-jitsu done.
Yeah.
You know, Nicky Rod went against the guy that was the ADCC absolute champ. Dude, really, really amazing jiu-jitsu and watching that Nicky Rod guy be able to move. He's so active and like a lot of the flexibility, he's fucking really good. And then, got to see Mason Fowler, you know, he was supposed to go against Gordon Ryan. Gordon had a rib injury. And so they subbed in, this Black Cat Rada and, it just was a bad day for that dude. I mean, you know, Victor had gone out and done the camp with Mason and prepping for Gordon. So he came back and he's like, this guy's fucking legit. And he was went out there and smashed this dude. So it was really cool to really be a very shitty average jiu-jitsu player where we're at and then see like the best dudes on the world fucking executing it. It was really fun to go see. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, and it's kind of interesting in that, you know, it's not necessarily striking and jits is kind of this weird like wrestling with submission, but it's almost... I like it almost more than the UFC because it's so skill-based. You know, you can have a guy come out who just basically just throws a haymaker, or dives and knees a guy in the face. And, you know, you see this and, you know, like I like watching really technical UFC fights where the guys strike and this and they're using different, you know, they're on the ground, they're getting up, they're, you know, they're good. You're using Muay Thai and they're, you know, I want to see somebody use all their skills. And I think what's really fascinating with the jiu-jitsu piece is, you get to see like the work that people's done. And I really did like Nicky Rod's body lock. So he was a big get on top body lock and then he uses the body lock to pass. Mm-hmm. So he has this whole passing based on the body lock. And what he does is he gets it low and then he tries to get it up underneath your arms. And then I was looking at it and I was like, yo man, that guy is super flexible, moves well. But it was fun to go see really high level jiu-jitsu in that environment. And then it was even better to see Victor win. So we were stoked.
Clearly his, I mean, those dudes were training in terms of jiu-jitsu, just like professional athletes, but now that they're training with you and that whole package is there. I mean, those guys are just taking over and that is awesome to see. It's awesome to see Power Athlete taking over. It's awesome to see those guys implementing Power Athlete and seeing it pay off on the mat. So, you know, I got, at least my gym, I direct everybody towards Power Athlete. It's pretty cool because some of the guys didn't know that me and you had this relationship. And I guess I don't know if they came across the blog or what, but they were like, oh, you know, and they started looking into it. Now they're on Dragon Slayer. So, yeah, man.
Awesome, dude. Well, I am stoked, one, that we got to do this for, you know, finishing up 2023 as a stake in the ground for 2024. And I'm making the promise, you know, Hunter's going to come in here in the podcast. I have like a list of like questions and discussions, everything from supplements to metabolic flexibility, protein synthesis. And I want to do a deep dive and really put some amazing content together, but I'm stoked we got to get this one done. So
for sure. Yeah. Appreciate you having me.
Oh yeah, dude. One of my favorite people to talk to. So, if you guys want more information, Dr. Waldman's not real big on social media.
Yeah.
which I'm totally jealous of. But we got a ton of stuff on the blog. And if you're in the Discord for Power Athlete or any of the coaches stuff we do, you can always tap him in. He's always real quick to jump in on everything, which is really why I've loved the Discord. It's added a different element, because now we get everybody from all the programs and we get to be able to kind of manage. And it's not siloed based upon the feeds. And it's been great, dude. And I really appreciate your contribution. So thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, John. Appreciate it, brother.
All right, man. Be good. And we'll be seeing you soon.
All right.
See you. Hey there, Power Athlete Nation. Big shout out to all the heavy hitters who stuck around till the final whistle. If you've been soaking in the knowledge bombs and epic tales we've been dropping for free, here's your chance to be a game changer. Swing by klfi.com/powerathlete and toss a few bucks our way to keep the podcast fueled and firing on all cylinders. That's ko-fi.com/powerathlete. Your support makes a difference. See ya.